Welcome to Bytes of Insight, the podcast from Arete where cybersecurity meets real-world impact. I'm Vinny Secor, Vice President of Business Development at Arete. Join me as I dive deep into the latest cybersecurity threats, defense strategies, and industry-shaping insights you need to stay ahead. Whether you're a security professional, a business leader, or simply curious about the future of digital defense, there's something here for you. Today, I have a good friend and colleague, Trenton Howard, with me. I'm excited to dive in with Trenton and talk all things dark web, as well as, you know, a number of topics surrounding threat intelligence. Trenton, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Vinny. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. So I guess the first place to start is let's have you introduce yourself to our audience.
Okay, absolutely. My name is Trenton Howard. I've been at Arete 4.5, going on 5 years now. I've been on the threat intelligence team the whole time. My specialty on the team is dark web research, attack surface intelligence, some blockchain and cryptocurrency research as well. And then is also threat actor research, attribution, things of that nature.
All right, that sounds great. And what did you do before you came to Arete?
So I worked for a couple different government contractors on the civilian side before I came to Arete. And then I also spent 6 years in the Air National Guard. 3 years of that was as an intel analyst supporting a defensive cyber operations unit. So fairly similar to what I do now, except more state-sponsored focused. And then 3 years of that was spent supporting a full motion video unit to where doing everything from vehicle follows with drones or UAVs to looking at, you know, terrorism financial networks or whatever the day brought.
You know, I had some friends of mine that did something similar. Were you based in the US or were you deployed somewhere?
I was based in the US the whole time. Both the units that I worked for, we deployed in-house for the most part. So I was in Iowa and then Alabama and spent some time in Texas for training. But yeah, everything was stayed stateside for me.
You know, I'd heard that a big part of the cyber group was going to be facilitated through the National Guard. And so that must have been part of the unit you're with. Kind of an aside, I have a good friend of mine that was in the Air Force and he would forecast weather for missions that were in Afghanistan. Like he was in Tennessee somewhere and he would be the last go, no go decision before, you know, an assignment went out and a mission went. And it was just so crazy that he'd be doing that here from the US while he's working with his team.
There's so much support that happens in the US for overseas. Like you look at outside of Las Vegas, where they fly UAVs out of not the only place, but one of the major operations there. So yeah, there's so much support that happens stateside.
Yeah, that's great. So why don't we start by taking a little bit of a deeper dive on some of the things that you mentioned that, you know, you do right now. And really, what I'd like to have you focus on is you listed a couple of things. You said you do blockchain research, attack surface management, you're involved in dark web research. And let's start with the dark web. Maybe for our audience, tell us what the dark web is. Is there a difference between dark web and deep web? And what types of activities are involved in what you do on a daily basis?
Absolutely. So I guess kind of going all the way back to the beginning, dark web is traffic that is routed through a Tor or Onion router. So it bounces out through a bunch of different relays to obfuscate traffic so that you can't tell where the original IP comes from. It's kind of like quick and dirty on it. And then what the deep web and dark web is, I wish we had a picture of it here, but there's the iceberg graphic that a lot of people like to use. And you see up at the top, it's like 3% is the clear web. And then like 80% or whatever it is the deep web. And so the deep web is anything that's not indexable or searchable by a search engine. So think like Google. So the things that could be on the deep web is like university pages, medical documents, medical information. And then the dark web is that information that's actually routed through Tor. And a lot of times it can be kind of a harbor for illicit activities such as, you know, drug and darknet marketplaces, dark web forums that are focused on cybercrime, selling compromised credentials, social or political unrest, firearms, and then all down the line, right?
I'm going to pause you. So with the dark web, can anyone get on it? Is there a secret password? Like, how does it work?
So anyone can technically get onto it, but not anyone can necessarily do it safely and securely / know where to go and what to look for. And then browsing the dark web in itself isn't all that difficult. You do typically have to kind of know what URLs to go to. There have been search engines on the dark web. None of them are very good. You're more than likely going to have to know where you want to go and what you want to look for. And then a lot of the forums are actually behind either a paywall or you have to develop some level of credibility before you can get access to certain things. So it's kind of a yes and no answer.
Okay. So it sounds like what you're describing is it is, in a sense, it's a private space, you know, is that I could download a Tor browser. For those of you that have kids, I think what we're trying to say is, you know, if your kids can download a Tor browser and get on, they can get into all kinds of trouble, but they kind of have to know where to go. There's not like there's a Google search engine that says XYZ and then all these links pop up.
Absolutely.
So typically when people are on the dark web, they must have been given a URL from someone to get to a site or to get to a forum.
Potentially have been given it, whether through conversations with another individual on the dark web. Kind of contrary to the point you just made, there are some open source collections of URLs that you can then browse to. So you can copy it from a clear website, go onto the dark web. And so you can get a start there. A lot of times, say you are on breach forums, which is one of the breach and ramp are kind of two of the most prevalent dark web forums focused on cybercrime. And there will be posts from different threat actors, and there could be a link to like a Pastebin website where you go to download data or be redirected to here or there. So there is some of that like proliferation there that brings you to the other sites as well.
So now tell us a little bit about how you interface with the dark web, what we at Arete do, things like that.
So at Arete, we kind of break up the dark web program into two different aspects. One is dark web research of threat actors, data breaches, known vulnerabilities or emerging vulnerabilities, I should say, all of the like threat intelligence research that's encompassed. And so that's a lot of data collection, a lot of threat actor research, node and graph analysis, looking for this threat actor is assessed to be part of this ransomware group. They have the credibility and they've built up their persona across various dark web forums. So if they're posting data that's associated with XYZ client, we can say with an assessment that it is most likely related to the client. Things of that nature, all just trying to build out the picture of, hey, who is this threat actor? What are they associated with? And what are they doing? The other piece of that is actually looking at, we have a victim that say, hypothetically, they have data exfiltration. Maybe their data is encrypted by ransomware, but they're able to restore from backups, which is something we're seeing happen more and more, right? And they are concerned about their data being on the dark web. Maybe the threat actor posted data to a data leak site, maybe they didn't. We've also seen threat actors increase the percentage of time that they are posting to breach and ramp forums as an additional extortion strategy, and also trying to sell that data to other threat actors.
Let me just pause you there for a second, because you've mentioned breach and ramp forums a couple times. Are those publicly accessible forums? Talk to me a little bit about what those are, why it matters to a victim that their data has been posted to one of those sites.
Absolutely. So breach and ramp are two of the most well-known cybercrime-related dark web forums. So there are posts on them, everything from posts from initial access brokers who have access to a victim organization and they're trying to sell that access instead of act upon it. There's data breaches and data associated with it. There's conversations of exploit code for whether it be a known vulnerability or potentially even a zero day. And then there's just other conversations that happen between threat actors. And again, all primarily focused around cybercrime. I mean, at the end of the day, most of the people working there are working there, but primarily focused around cybercrime. And the big thing is that it's behind a paywall. So you actually have to make a payment. It's not a lot of money, but you do have to facilitate a payment using Bitcoin to access the forum. And then with that, you create an account. So when you start your account, dark web is largely reputational based. So if no one knows who you are and you come in and you try and sell a database that could be worth a million or millions of dollars, not saying no one's going to consider buying that data from you. It's a lot less likely that they're going to purchase that data than if it was someone who has been active on the forum for years and has sold other data previously successfully, has gotten good reviews, all of that, all building up their credibility and reputation.
And so then what you're saying is that there's regulars in these forums.
Yes, sir.
There's recognizable, maybe I'll use the term user IDs, there's recognizable personas. You know, so there's a social aspect to the forums as well. I mean, if they're talking about video games and there's a social network piece of this, I guess as well.
There is. Absolutely. And that's something that we track here at Arete for, you know, all the threat actors that are major players on the dark web. We will have a handle for them in our threat intelligence platform. And then we try and track and associate what ransomware groups do we think they may be a part of? What operations are they doing? There's a growing prevalence that I've seen from threat actors doing different types of fraud and cybercrime activity. So one day a threat actor might be posting being initial access broker and trying to sell compromised credentials to other threat actors. The next day might be like, you know, I'm actually going to act on my initial access and work with this ransomware as a service group and encrypt data and try and receive a ransom payment. The next day they're doing social engineering tactics, trying to trick individuals into sending them their Bitcoin from Coinbase. It's all of these different things. And that's, I've seen a big uptick in that over the past, let's say, 6 to 12 months. I can't say exactly how long, where I don't know if it's a threat actor is attempting to kind of de-risk by not focusing on one thing or just being more opportunistic in nature. I can't say for certain, but we have seen a lot of overlap in threat actors doing various different types of criminal activity.
You know, you've used that term initial access broker a couple times, and some folks may not actually understand what an initial access broker is. Do you have a kind of a quick, easy definition for what an initial access broker is and what they do?
Initial access broker, they will identify initial access or gain initial access into organizations, and then they will post on the dark web advertising that access. So kind of an example, right? They'll typically say, I have VPN access to an organization in this sector doing this much in revenue, and I'm attempting to sell it for $500 or $1,000 or however much. They'll either list, if it's on breach or ramp, they'll probably attempt to sell it to have conversations with other threat actors by like a personal message, or they may list a Telegram, or potentially even a Signal, something along those lines to communicate and then sell that access. So that's something that's kind of interesting from a threat intelligence perspective, is being able to say, you know, say we have a client that is in this sector and this revenue size, we can monitor for that and say, we think you potentially have a, you know, indicator of a pending attack here, and they can monitor and search further from their threat hunting activities, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's also where people can go to find username and passwords too, right? I had been hired by a new company that I was working with, and they were trying to find me the WebEx password to use for our WebEx software. And at the same time, I had a friend that, you know, did something similar to what you do. And just to kind of demonstrate the capability, he had sent me a list of everyone's usernames and passwords that he found for this company that I worked at. And so I texted the CEO. I said, hey, I don't need the WebEx password. It's da, da, da. I told him what it was. He's like, how did you get that? I said, it's available on the dark web. And so needless to say, we changed all our passwords that week. So this is for folks in the audience, you know, you read about usernames and passwords that are leaked or that have been stolen. Well, this is where they're all stored, right? And then like stolen credit card numbers, stolen social security numbers, are those also stored on the dark web?
They can be, absolutely. There are specific carding forums that hold a lot of that information, and where a credit card that's compromised, someone can go on and it's pretty straightforward process of purchasing that card from the carding forum. And there's, you know, lots of different carding marketplaces that you can purchase that information from.
And so what I'm gathering is that the dark web is somewhere that criminals of almost any form, they don't have to be cyber criminals. If you heist art, you could probably sell it on the dark web. There's probably forums for, you know, art and all kinds of things, or even services that are illegal are probably also brokered on the dark web. Is that relatively true?
No, that is true. Actually, when the dark web started, it really wasn't focused on cybercrime. It was more about drugs and illicit activities associated with that. That's really where it got its start. And then now it's, you know, evolved into all the different facets. But there are other, you know, illicit services. I will say everyone always wants to talk about hitman services on the dark web. Stories that I've heard from individuals' experience with law enforcement activities, it sounds like most of those tend to be fake. It's usually actually law enforcement behind it trying to arrest people. But yeah, there's a pretty broad plethora of different illicit activity going on the dark web.
I had a friend of mine that ran, I guess you'd say, he'd call it human intelligence. And so, you know, he had a team of folks that would live on the dark web and harvest and gather all kinds of information that way. So, okay, let's talk a little bit about attack surface management. You mentioned that in the beginning. What is it? Is it relevant to what we've been talking about, the dark web? What's the value of it to our clients, to policyholders out there? You know, just kind of give us an overview of what attack surface management is and where its value is.
Absolutely. So attack surface management or attack surface intelligence is looking at, it's enumerating external assets and then mapping potential issues to those assets in an effort to determine what a threat actor sees when they look at your environment. So there's a hypothetical threat actor sitting out there and they say, I'm going to look at XYZ company. What are they going to see or what they could they potentially see or find by looking at your external attack surface and then giving best practices and guidelines of how to mitigate some of those threats? So, for example, I'll start with vulnerabilities. We scan for the client's assets, external assets, and then we identify those assets. We see what software they're running. We can see all these things and say, here's the list of vulnerabilities that are associated with your external assets. But then, and that's kind of very similar to a vulnerability scan, but where it starts to differ is the threat intelligence piece of that is saying, so we found these vulnerabilities and say traditional guidelines would say patch the highest severity one first, right? But being an intelligence shop, we're able to say, yes, but this vulnerability, even though it's only medium severity, actually has known exploit code available and it's being exploited by these ransomware groups as part of this campaign against, you know, victims in this sector. We can get that granular if we need to and want to. And that really is the value from the vulnerability piece. There's some other cool things of it. It's really trying to paint the picture of what your external risk looks like across your whole organization. So we can say, hey, you have this port open on this IP or this domain. Do you really need it? Is it something that you guys are using or is it something you can shut down? We can look and say, you know, your organization is based in the US, but you have infrastructure in this country overseas. Do you do operations over there or is that something you were even tracking? And then also look for compromised credentials and the dark web piece of it, really tracking it by looking at your external infrastructure in relation to the compromised credentials that are out there. So if there's a credential that's available for airtayir.com and it's Vinny or Trenton's username and password, we can say, okay, it's probably related to the client, right? And we can send that to them and then they can, you know, update their password. So it really is a broad perspective, looking at DNS and SOA records for potential phishing and everything in between. So where I said it before, but paint that picture of, you know, the external risk for the client and then try and help them mitigate that.
So it definitely sounds different than the traditional vulnerability scan penetration testing approach. I mean, those are typically not necessarily relying on threat intelligence and what we know. And now, do we do dark web scans on behalf of clients? Like when we have a victim organization, isn't that part of our standard process is that we do dark web research on them just so we know what's out there?
So we do dark web research either from like a one-time search, like during DFR investigations or kind of on the back half managed service side doing monitoring for 3, 6, 12 months. We've had clients that have done for 24 months. And what we do is we look at who is the threat actor that your incident was with, what data sets were infected. We can look at the forensics logs and know, hey, the threat actor was here and this is the type of data that they had access to. If there's anything of particular concern to the client, whether it be executives' PII or someone else's PII or a specific software or tool that they have developed or technology that they've developed that they're concerned from a competitor perspective, we can monitor for mentions of that on the dark web. And what we do is the longer the engagement is ongoing, the more we can kind of broadly look for everything that the client wants us to, just by kind of switching out objectives as we go and being really programmable. That's how I've tried to build the dark web program to be able to fit really any client's needs and be flexible with that. I mean, one example of that is some clients want everything in an email update. Some clients do not want anything written down, right? So everything happens via call. Some clients only want to hear if we hit on like a smoking gun versus some clients want to know absolutely everything. So really being programmable and flexible in our approach and then how we deliver findings to the clients as well.
I think that's something that a lot of people don't really understand that know what it is and understand outside of our industry. Like for you and I and the team here, dark web research is part of our normal day. I remember I was helping a client out. They had already had an incident. They had actually already thought that they had resolved it. And then we were brought in after the fact by a carrier. And the first thing our EL did was, you know, do a dark web search and found that they were listed on a DLS site. And the victim had no idea because that wasn't part of what they do. Their MSP that had helped them out did a great job in closing things out and getting the, you know, getting the bad guys out, but didn't have the expertise that, you know, that we have with dark web research. Well, Trent, this is great. You know, I'm looking forward to our next chat. You know, thanks for taking time. We only got to a portion of the things on my list that I wanted to talk to you about. You know, I thank you for taking us deeper into the dark web, if I could use a pun. We'll catch up with you again soon, and I'm looking forward to our next call.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning into Bytes of Insight. If you found today's episode valuable, be sure to follow on Spotify for more expert insights and actionable advice in future episodes. Alongside Bytes of Insight, this channel also features our monthly Cyber Campfire, where our threat intel team dives into emerging and ongoing trends. For more information on Arete Solutions and our mission to create a world free from cyber extortion, visit us at areteir.com. If you'd like to connect or have any questions, contact our marketing team at marketing@areteir.com. And for immediate support with an active cyber incident, please contact us at arete911@areteir.com. As always, it's been a pleasure to spend some time with you. And until next time, stay safe and secure.